once again, and welcome to episode 29 of Bee Boomer Unleashed. I'm your host, Jerry Lake, the Unleashed Baby Boomer, and I'll be your host for this episode and all the episodes of Bee Boomer Unleashed. Today's episode, episode 29, is Dating Through the Decades, Part 2, Enter the Feminist Movement, and we'll be talking more about that later. But first, let me remind you, as always, you can find us at beeboomerunleashed.podbean.com. You can also find us on iTunes and Google Play at Bee Boomer Unleashed, on iHeartRadio at bee.boomer. You can find our link on Facebook, Spotify, Tumblr, and Instagram at Bee Boomer Unleashed, and on Twitter at Bee Boomer Unleash 1. Also, we encourage you to drop us an email at beeboomerunleashed@gmail.com. Once again, that's beeboomerunleashed@gmail.com. Always glad to hear your comments, suggestions for the show. Well, I had a birthday last week, and my lovely wife bought me some more recording equipment for my birthday. I'm not using it right now, but she bought me a great digital recorder and some additional microphones and cabling, which will make it real easy to have guests and guest interviews on the show. So those of you who might have been a little apprehensive about coming to the Bee Boomer Unleashed studios here to record, we can do that telephonically now. So if you'd like to be a guest on the show or have a topic that you would like to discuss with us here on the show, please email us at beeboomerunleashed@gmail.com, and we'll use some of this great equipment that my lovely wife bought me for my birthday. 69 years old. Wow, that's old, isn't it? Not quite as old as one of our listeners, Mike, but Mike, I'm catching up with you, buddy, so it won't be long. Well, if you remember last week, we started this discussion on dating through the decades, and we talked a bit about old-fashioned dating back in the 1800s and the early 1900s, and we talked about the fact that many times there was no dating at all, that marriages were arranged, dads got together and struck a deal, and the rest was history. But then we fast-forwarded to the 1950s, and if you'll remember, in the 1950s, it was fairly a more or less a male-dominated situation of instigating or initiating a date, so to speak, that the female never asked for someone to go out with them. It was always the male who asked, and the girls, the young ladies of the era, tried to figure out how to attract a man for a date. Well, things certainly changed, and in talking about dating in the 60s and 70s, as we get into this part two, we would be remiss if we didn't say the feminist movement of the late 60s and the 70s did not have a profound impact on this thing we call dating. Now, if you'll remember, early in the 60s and into the 70s, there were a lot of things that happened societally to change the outlook of women and men forever. Now, there's always been a certain amount of feminist activity or movement, if you will. Primarily, up till the 1920s, it was a movement to allow women to vote. That seems funny now, doesn't it, that women did not have the right to vote back in those days. But certainly, there were women, there were female activists back in those days who were pioneers on getting women the vote. And you really didn't hear a whole lot about feminist activism until the 1960s. Now, there was some along the way, obviously, but really it came to its own in the 1960s and particularly in the 1970s. Well, what do you mean by the feminist movement? Well, in the late 60s and early 70s, more women were attending college. You know, up until that time, college was primarily a male-dominated institution where men got college degrees and took care of the financial aspects, and the ladies took care of the home. But the feminist movement inspired women to think of themselves as more than a wife and a mother. Imagine that. And they were no longer dependent on a husband or father for financial support. Women, you know, they could have a career and support themselves. Men weren't needed. Why would you need a man if you can support yourself? And even for the reproductive cycle of women, certainly a man can't biologically have a child by himself, but a woman with a sperm donor, and artificial insemination can certainly have a child without a man. So the men, really, and according to this feminine movement, or this feminist movement, were really not a necessary evil, if you will. So they decided that marriage and children were no longer the hallmarks of success for a woman. You remember, some of you who are old enough to remember the commercial for Virginia Slims cigarettes. Those boomers can remember that. And you had this woman that, I think the song was something like, "I can bring home the bacon fried up in a pan because I'm WOMAN, woman." And, you know, you remember the song, "I am woman, hear me roar." You know, there were all these things where women were after their independence and they wanted to be independent. Women of the 70s had working girl Mary Tyler Moore. Remember Mary Tyler Moore? She was that working girl, and she was part of that feminist movement. Then along came the birth control pill. Birth control pill came in about 1960, and by 1973, it had become the most used form of birth control, with more than 10 million users. Imagine that. Having reliable birth control at that time gave women, you know, really more control over their bodies. And sex was no longer tied to reproduction. Sex became recreational sex. It wasn't tied to reproduction anymore. In the 60s and 70s, in particular, women and men, because of that, they weren't in monogamous relationships. Even if they were having sex outside the bonds of marriage, it was monogamous back through the 50s. But now they could have multiple partners. You remember Woodstock, the hippie movement, sex, drugs, and rock and roll? You remember all that? Well, having this reliable birth control gave these women control over their own lives. They were conditioned often to want babies, want pregnancies, but babies also represented a burden that tied the woman to the home. God forbid that she would be a stay-at-home mom. The birth control pill allowed the women to have sex without the fear of pregnancy. So not only did they postpone having kids after they got married by this birth control, but they would use it as they had casual or recreational sex partners to keep from having unwanted burden of being pregnant. And then, of course, hanging out. Society was changing and dating became more casual. You know, you really weren't dating a lot of times to look for a spouse. You were dating just to have something to do, and people started referring to going out on dates as hanging out or hooking up, and the expectation that dates were part of the path leading from the meeting to marriage. You know, that kind of is a thing of the past now. That was withering away. And premarital sex was becoming more and more common. Back in the early boomer days, back in the 50s and early 60s, you know, if a girl got pregnant out of wedlock, she was considered to be a loose woman or a tramp, you know, to put it quite bluntly. But then premarital sex became more commonplace, and the birth control made that premarital sex undetectable. In other words, back in the day, a lot of times you had premarital sex, you got pregnant. And then Betty Lou got pregnant. She went off to live with Aunt Lucy for 9 months, and she came back without a baby because somebody in the family had adopted the baby. So they were just participating in more relationships just for fun. And this had begun to gain acceptance among young couples. Now, in the 60s, as we talked about the sexual revolution, you know, women were still expected to be nice and polite in the 60s, the early 60s in particular. Women oftentimes were called upon to hide their intelligence. They were never to show that they were smarter than their date. Well, trust me, my wife is a whole lot smarter than I am. And I'm glad she is, but women back in the day, you know, it would have been unheard of for an uneducated man to marry a doctor, a female doctor or something like that, and be Mr. Mom or stay-at-home dad Well, that's commonplace now, you know, for the woman to make more money than the man. Oh, what an embarrassment that would have been back in the day. They were still kind of tied to that in the early 60s, but then they kind of got over it. But in the 60s, men were still expected to pay for the date. By doing so, they had the right to hold your hand, put your arm around you, stuff like that, you know. So men were still expected, even in the early 60s, to be the one that's kind of in charge of the dating ritual, if you will. In the 1960s, kisses on the first date were still frowned upon a little bit. But then you get midway through the 60s, and, you know, a lot of things happened. Remember 1963, a lot of things happened in that decade of the 60s to change the face of dating. The Equal Pay Act is passed by Congress. Back before that, a man and a woman could basically be doing the same job, but they didn't get the same wages for the same work. And it was the other way, too. For example, I remember back in the 1960s, I was looking for summer employment when I was in Marshall, and I happened to be gifted in typing. I could type really, really fast without any mistakes. I credit a lot of that to Lucy Clark, my typing teacher, who was an excellent teacher, and I was the fastest typist in the class. Didn't get the senior typing award, that being said. And several years later, I asked Ms. Clark why I didn't get that award. And she said, well, I'd never given it to a guy before, and I thought you might be embarrassed. So times have certainly changed. Times have certainly changed. But I applied for summer work with C&O Railroad. At that time, it was C&O, later became CSX, as a clerk typist. Well, I scored a tremendous score on the typing test. I got a great score on the aptitude test, and they called me in and said, well, we're going to offer you a job out on the road, out on the railroad. And I said, well, you know, doing what? Am I going to be in a caboose typing up reports, or what am I going to be doing? Oh, no, you're going to be working with the road gang out on the railroad. And I said, no, I applied for a clerk typist job. You know, I'm not interested in being out there with a sledgehammer and a pick working on the road with these guys. I said, well, you know, we reserve those jobs mostly for women. That was a different day and a different time. Those women who would do the same work as a man weren't getting paid the same. Well, that changed in 1963. And then in 1964, Title VII passed. That was a Civil Rights Act prohibiting sex discrimination in employment. You couldn't not hire a woman or a man based upon their sex. Well, that happened to me in about 1968 or 69 when I applied for that job for the railroad. But back in those days, you just really didn't make waves. You just didn't really make a stink about something that like that. And the Equal Opportunity Employment Opportunity Commission was created, the EEOC. So that was created back in 64. So women gaining these rights, gaining their independence. 1964, the Supreme Court. Now think of this. 1965, the Supreme Court establishes the right of married couples to use contraception. It was frowned upon before those days, and a lot of folks said, well, I mean, I guess it was illegal in some places once you were married to use contraception, but they allowed that to happen. Then in 68, that's the year I graduated from high school, President Lyndon B. Johnson signed an executive order prohibiting sex discrimination by government contractors and requiring affirmative action plans for hiring women. So if you hired so many people, so many of them had to be women. So if you were hired, say, 30 people, maybe 10 of them had to be women. So affirmative action, it was a bad idea back then. I think it's still a bad idea today, but I think people ought to be hired on the merits of their skills or their work set, not on the basis of their sexual identity. But then that's a topic for another day, I suppose. Well, in 1969, California, imagine this, California adopts the nation's first no-fault divorce law. You know, before that, you had to have a reason to get and apply for and be awarded a divorce. It was either, you know, somebody was fornicating, committing adultery, somebody was beating their wife, there was some other criminal activity going on that would precipitate a divorce proceeding. But California adopts the nation's first no-fault divorce law. You just apply for divorce. We don't want it. It's not working out, so we're going to get divorced. And so they allowed this divorce by mutual consent. And also in 1969, Hillary Clinton. Does anybody remember Hillary Clinton? Well, at Wellesley College, Hillary Clinton became the first female student to address the graduating class at commencement. Imagine that. Imagine that. Hillary Clinton. Then in 1972, something we all hold near and dear, Title IX. Title IX of the Education Amendments prohibits sex discrimination in all aspects of education programs that receive federal support. And enter the Title IX regarding sports. If you had a men's basketball team, you had to have some equivalent for the women and so forth and so on. That was Title IX. I think it's kind of interesting now that the transvestites are trying to take over women's sports. I guess we'll have to see where that goes, see what kind of title we come up, see what happens there. But anyway, that's Title IX. 1973, Roe v. Wade. Remember Roe v. Wade making abortion legal? And then in 1974, housing discrimination was made illegal. 1975, denies states the rights to exclude women from juries. So before that time, a lot of states just had male jurors. Imagine this. Think of this. In 1980, the first year of the 1980s decade, a lady by the name of Paula Hawkins of Florida, a Republican, becomes the first woman to be elected to the U.S. Senate without following her husband or father in the job. So she was the first one that was elected outright to a Senate seat. That's 1980. That seems just like yesterday, but wow, 1980. Imagine that. Well, let's look at the effect that some of that had on dating in the 70s. You know, women began raising their voices. Thanks to the hippies of the 60s, women's rights activists began to roar. They began to surface. I remember going to Marshall University in the late 60s and early 70s, and, you know, those were the days when a gentleman held open a car door for a lady as they were going on a date. She got in the car. He opened the door. He shut the door. He pulled the chair back for her to sit down at a restaurant. If they were going someplace and they had to cross the threshold of a door, the gentleman would hold the door open for the lady to pass through. If they were going across the street, he would offer her his hand or his arm to help her across the street. It was a day of ladies and gentlemen. Well, I remember my first encounter with this at Marshall of a negative nature. We were coming in from Old Main down the steps and into the doors there at Smith Hall, which was an educational building on the campus of Marshall University. And I was going and it was raining. I held the door open for a young, and I use the term loosely, lady, so that she could go in before me. And she looked at me and she said, "Do I look like my arms are broken? I can open the blank door myself." And I said, "Yes, ma'am." And then I just went on through the door and she opened the door herself. Well, certainly she was able to do that. There's no doubt in my mind that she was certainly physically able to open that door. But women were in such a frenzy following the leadership of these women's lib movement people, these women who wanted equal rights for women. I'm all about equal rights. Don't get me wrong. I don't have a problem with that. But this violent, if you will, rhetoric that was being spread by these women, and, you know, I think it's kind of interesting to note that most of the early participants, the leaders of the women's movement, were not feminine in the least. They were not a bit feminine. A lot of them were ugly women who couldn't get a date on prom night. And, you know, I'm going to catch some feedback for that, obviously. But they were angry. They were angry women. And, you know, they were spreading this vitriol, if you will, among other feminine, really feminine women who participated in this women's movement. And, you know, that's a shame. You know, I don't know why any woman, would want to bring herself down to the level of a man. You see, women are a precious commodity. God made them very special. He created Eve to be a helpmate for Adam. And women should be placed upon a pedestal. They should be treated kindly. They should be treated softly. They should be treated gently. And they should be cared for and protected by their male counterpart. And why a woman would want to bring herself down to the level of a man is beyond me. But certainly some women have wanted to do that. Now, don't get me wrong. Not every woman's like that. You know, my wife is a lady in every sense of the word. And we know a lot of fine ladies. We know a lot of fine young ladies who like to be treated like ladies. But why this feminine or this feminist movement wanted to bring a lady down to the level of a man is beyond me. Before that, they were on a pedestal where they should have been instead of being looked at as competition in the workforce. Living together before marriage became normal back in the 70s. They just shacked up, if you will. They lived together. Sex wasn't a hushed thing to talk about anymore or even to engage in. People openly discussed sex and sexual activities during the 1970s, and a lot of that was drug-induced, if you will. Lots of folks smoking pot, dropping acid, doing all these recreational drugs back in the 70s, and which dropped the inhibition level, which caused them to do things they probably wouldn't have done had they not been high or had they been sober. Communicating with men was now done on the phone or in person. So communicating with men took place on the phone a lot. Remember, this was pre-cell phone days. This is pre-texting. You know, we haven't always had cell phones and text messages. Dating became less restrictive. So now if a female wanted to ask a man on a date, she could certainly do that. Not a problem to do that because, you know, she was, you know, certainly able to do that. If she could bring home the bacon and fry it up in a pan, she could certainly ask a man on a date. And the divorce rate was just going through the roof. So you say, well, why did that happen? Well, I believe that because in the 70s, when these people were accustomed to having quote-unquote multiple partners prior to marriage and shacking up and having casual sexual relationships, then when they got married, they said, well, why do I have to be faithful just to one guy or one woman? I'll just have me an affair, and if this one doesn't work out, we'll get a divorce, and if that one doesn't work out, we'll get another divorce. And so that was just down the path. So the decade of the 60s and the 70s changed the role of the male in the dating relationship forever. Some people would say, well, that's a good thing. We women were oppressed. We, you know, that's just the way we were. But no, it was a different time. I certainly have a great respect for women. I would never want a woman to do the same job as a man and not get paid the same, with the exception of the current debate on women's soccer. They talk about being underpaid. They ought to get the same pay as the men do. Well, draw as many people to the game as the men do, and, you know, there's only so much money to go around from ticket sales and popcorn. And if you sell more to men's game, obviously they're going to be paid more. Professional football players are paid more than professional soccer players. So, you know, and the purses in PGA tournaments are less for women than they are for men. Why? Because they don't have as many sponsors. They don't have as many ticket buyers. They don't have as many people coming to watch them. And that's not to be nasty or to be mean. It's just a fact of life. So there you have it. Well, I'm sure I'll hear about that too. Well, listen, that's probably all we have time for today. Next week, we'll talk about the 80s up to 2000 and any changes that came along then and this dating through the decades. And then following that, we'll go into the decade of the 2000s, or the 21st century, if you will, And we'll go from 2000 up to 2019 and see what it's come today. And my, what a difference it is from what we had back in the 1950s and even in the 1960s. Well, thanks for listening. We really appreciated it. We wouldn't have a podcast if it weren't for our listeners. And we thank you for tuning in and listening. Recommend us to your friends if you liked it. If you didn't like it, just kind of keep quiet about it. We'd appreciate that too. But if you like us, share us on Facebook, share us with your friends. Next week, we're going to be talking about Dating Through the Decades, Part 3, the 1980s and the 1990s. And remember, if you would like to help me break in this new recording equipment that my wife got me for my birthday, if you would like to be a guest on Be Boomer Unleashed, we would love to have you as a person who would discuss just about any topic you want to discuss, as long as it has something to do with Boomer days and today. So have a great week. Have a great week. And may God bless each and every one of you. Goodbye.